Last night, at Friday Night Live, in a slightly different context, I began with the following story. I told about how once Reb Lev Yitzchak of Berdichev went to the marketplace and began to give a sermon. And all the people who were trying to do business said, you know, Rabbi, it's lovely to see you and all, but we're trying to make money here. And he said, oh, my mistake. I thought that since you come to synagogue and talk about business, I could come to the marketplace and talk about Torah. So today I figured I would come to the synagogue and talk about business. Now, those of you who receive the weekly message that I send out, which we send out by email, know that with the message, you get the title of the sermon for that week. And the title of the sermon for this week was Jewish Business Ethics. But I put a question mark at the end of it. Not as in, is there such a thing? But what relevance does it have, and how many people believe in it? And it was sparked by two things. The first was a lunch that I had earlier this week with a young man who is a businessman and quite a successful one, and very charitable as well. And he said to me, you know, Rabbi, it's killing me to see how the Jews in our community behave. And I don't know how aware you are of this, but we have parents suing children and brothers suing sisters and families torn apart. Legal actions, civil and criminal, and all over business. And then I was reading the Parsha, just to calm myself down. And I came to the part where if somebody becomes an indentured servant because they owe money they can't pay, remember there was no debtor's prison in the ancient world, and they serve you for 6 years, on the seventh year, of course, they go. They're free. They leave. And what interested me about the section where it says that they must leave is the Torah goes on to say, Lo yikshe be'enecha, bishlachacha oto chofshi me'imach. Which means, don't be upset that this person is leaving. And I thought to myself, okay, let's translate this. The Torah is saying, don't be upset that a slave is going free and is able to stand on his own two feet. Why would you be upset? And of course, the only conceivable reason that you would be upset is because it represents an economic loss. You've had a slave for 6 years and now you're not going to have one. You'll have to do your own dishes. And I thought, the fact that the Torah tells you explicitly you're not allowed to be upset about this reminds us the way in which we're supposed to transcend our love of money and our love of economic success and reorient our attitude so that we wouldn't, in fact, do anything to make money. Not only are you not supposed to be upset, but lo tishlach chenu rekam, you're not supposed to send him out with nothing. You're supposed to give him food and clothes and sufficient money so that he can get started in life. In other words, tzedakah, which is one of the ways that the Jewish tradition tries to train people to transcend that impulse of grabbing and holding, of not being willing to let go, of assuming that money exists only to serve me and not to seed goodness throughout the world. As when Rabbi Tarfon gave a bunch of money to Rabbi Akiva and said, invest this for me, because Rabbi Tarfon was one of the very few wealthy rabbis in Talmudic times, and Rabbi Akiva said, I'll invest it for you. And when Rabbi Tarfon went to him and said, I want to see the result of my investment, Akiva showed him schools. He said, this is your investment. It is a much greater investment than any other. When someone passes away and they go to heaven, according to the Talmud, and they stand before the throne of judgment, do you know the very first question they're asked? Think about it. What is the first question you're asked to evaluate your life on earth when you stand before God in heaven? The question is, Natata v'nasata be'emunah, were you honest in your business? The very first question. And I want to unpack that just a little bit. First, I'd like to translate it. Did you cheat on your taxes? Did you sell someone a house and you knew there was something wrong with it, but you didn't tell them? Because after all, you would have gotten less money. In other words, did you love the money more than you loved your soul? Did you not care how much you sullied what was inside you as long as you could get more stuff from outside you? Because that's the essence of Jewish business ethics. It's not only to create a just society, it is also to carry out the advice that we get in the Torah, Yishamer et nafshecha ma'od, you should guard your soul very carefully. And you have to guard it carefully, not from what other people will do, but from what you will do. Because we're the ones who sully our own souls, who make them dirty, who devalue them, who don't treat them as though they are gifts from God. Earlier, Rabbi Sella gave a beautiful drasha about the laws of kashrut and what it means to really make something kosher. And kashrut, you know, is something that Jews are known for. People may not know what keeping kosher is, but they know of keeping kosher. Do you know how many laws there are in the Torah that govern what you eat? 24 of them. Do you know how many laws there are in the Torah that govern economic activity, business ethics? Over 100. And yet you have people who care very much about what they eat and not at all about how they act in the marketplace. But the Torah actually reverses that priority. I remember a friend of mine, a rabbi, who went into a store with his daughter. And he bought something and the cashier gave him too much change. And he gave him back the extra and said, you made a mistake, you gave me too much. And the cashier said, oh, you're a very honest person. He said, I try to be, but actually the reason I gave you back the money is because I'm a religious Jew. And he said, he did that because he wanted his daughter and the cashier to know that that's what it means to be a religious Jew. It is not to cheat, or better phrased, it is to not cheat. That's what it is to be a religious Jew. It's to care about things more than just about how much you make. I know that there are people who try to make a certain amount of money because they want to live a certain way, and then there are people who are sure in every deal to make money because they don't want to come out on the short end. How many lawsuits are there, not because someone needs the money, but because they don't want to feel like a sucker? You don't want to feel like someone else did something to you and can get away with it. But I want to suggest you a different way of thinking about it, which is the other person is the sucker because they sold the integrity of their soul for money. And what do you care? Is the money really going to change your life? Or is it the principle of the thing, which is another way of saying, I'm going to fight to grind that guy down? As Harry Truman used to say, sometimes you have to put aside your principles and do the right thing. Hishamer et nafshecha ma'od. It's not your balance sheet, but your soul that you have to take care of. In the Shema, we say you must love God b'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshecha, b'chol me'odecha. With all your heart, we understand that. With all your soul, that's clear. And with all your might. What's all your might? According to Rashi, it means with all your possessions, with all your wealth. You have to use your wealth to love God. In fact, the best recent book on Jewish business ethics, written by a very famous economist in Israel who happens to also be an Orthodox Jew, Meir Tamari, is called With All Your Possessions. It means that you have to use your possessions in a way that reflect your values, that your money is actually not separate from your values. It's a part of it. I began with Reb Lev Yitzchak of Berdichev, so let me read you something he once wrote. Look how powerful, he wrote, is the law of Moses. The Tsar, he wrote this obviously in Russia, has many policemen and soldiers, and he's alive and well, and he rules his kingdom with an iron hand. The Tsar has forbidden the import of liquor and other articles, except by license, yet his kingdom is filled with smuggled goods. Moses has been dead for many centuries. He has no Cossacks and no divisions. Yet he said that one is not allowed to have leavened bread in one's home for 7 days, and in all Jewish homes, there's no leavened bread on Passover. In other words, the things that people really care about, that touch their souls, that move them, that they can follow whether there is enforcement from the outside or not. It depends whether you care. My friend Joseph Telushkin says all the time that he's amazed by the fact that people try to go on diets. They know that they'll look better, they'll feel better, they'll live longer, it's healthier, and still they break their diet. But these same people keep kosher. And if you put in front of them the most tasty-looking morsel and you tell them it's not kosher, they wouldn't think of touching it. How is that? And the answer is that it all has to do with your fundamental values, what you think is most important, what you think is sacred. And if we separate money from sanctity, then it will continue to tear families apart, and we will continue to think nothing of cheating. But if we realize b'chol me'odecha, that we are supposed to love God with what we have, with our goods, with our wealth, with our possessions, then things will be different. Sometimes. Sometimes when I ask someone to give to the synagogue, and you know rabbis, part of their portfolio is fundraiser. And I say to somebody, I want you to give to the synagogue, or I want you to contribute to the school. I want you to help us with the reconstruction so that our children will breathe clean air. And they say, you know, Rabbi, I wish I could help, but I can't. Or they give me a contribution that I know is a contribution so that I will stop asking. I want to say to the person, okay, fair enough. Tell me, what are you going to do with that money? I just want to know. If you're going to feed your family, if you're going to build a house, if you're going to give it to some other charitable organization, then I understand. But if you're going to hold on to it just because holding on to money makes you feel good, then boy, I wish you would give it to Rabbi Akiva to invest. In this world, money is power. It can do remarkable things. But you have to be willing for it to do that. You have to be willing not only to make it, but to let it go. To watch it do things in this world. To see the marvels that it can create. To understand that as we approach the high holidays, we have to live on a plane higher than the material plane alone. That we have to create together. That the money is not worth parents being estranged from their children and brothers from their sisters. And sometimes husbands from their wives. Money is powerful. But in the end, it's just money. The Midrash teaches that everyone comes into the world like this, and everyone leaves it like that. As if to say, when you first come into the world, there's an awful lot I want to grab, but as you get older and your hand starts to open, you realize that you leave with nothing. Nobody will carry their wealth with them into Olam Haba. Because, as the rabbis teach us in a slightly updated version of what they said, in Olam Haba, in the world to come, they don't count money, they only count receipts. It's not what you have, but what you've given away. It's not what you've done. It's what your money has made of you. It can make of you someone who is charitable and ethical and whose soul is shaped by the principle of Bechol Me'odecha, of loving God with everything that we have, our hearts, our souls, and our possessions. As we begin this month of Elul, which is a month of self-examination, let's examine ourselves the best way, which is not just to look at how we feel, but to explore what we do. And I hope that it will nudge all of us to be, with our possessions, a little more ethical, a little more charitable, and a little more loving towards each other, and, as the Torah advises, towards God. Shabbat Shalom.